Whether you are sharing the story of some recent work drama, a conflict in your relationship, your struggles at a new job, the way that you tell your story can totally shift how you feel, how you think, and how you behave. In this podcast episode, I am interviewing the lovely Kim Schneiderman, the author of Step Out of Your Story, a book that gives you detailed ideas on how to choose different versions of your story that help you to redirect your energy and create a narrative that leads you towards your desires and goals. I would love for you to share a bit of an overview of the concept behind your book, Step Out of Your Story, for the listeners.
Sure. So the premise of my book is that every life is an unfolding story. It's a unique, unpredictable, and potentially heroic story that's open to interpretation, especially your own. And if we can actually view our lives as stories, we can actually reframe the obstacles that we face as opportunities to grow and even to stretch beyond our comfort zones in the way that, you know, any character in a novel or a film does.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And something that you talk about in your book is really approaching this from, I think you call it, a psychologically distanced vantage point and the benefits of that. So can you talk to me about what those benefits are and how someone might do that?
So one of the things that I often ask people to do is to write about themselves in the third person narrative. And that's not like some clever gimmick. There's actually a body of studies that show that when people view their lives through the third person narrative, that it helps them, like seeing yourself instead of like an I, seeing themselves as a he or a she or a they, that they tend to view the things that they've been through more compassionate eyes.
Yeah.
It's a way of sort of seeing yourself as overcoming obstacles. And what happens is that people are often very attached to their I story. You know, it's like very identified with that word I, right? So what happens is when you ask people to write about yourselves in the third person, there's a little bit of space, right? Suddenly, I didn't overcome cancer, but she did. And look what all the things that she went through. And for some reason, that distance vantage point, seeing yourself as a character in a story or even a soul playing a role, it helps us to sort of transcend the story a little bit and get some distance from it so that we can sort of root for that character the way we would root for the protagonist of our favorite novel.
Yes, I love that. A soul with a role. That is such a good way to put it. And we're talking about, obviously, you know, writing from this third person perspective. What are we writing about? Are we writing about like the story that we're in right now? Are we writing about the stories of our lives, you know, past? Or what do you usually focus on?
Well, you can do it with any, and you can write about it, you know, in the past, you can write about it in the present. I tend to invite people to focus on the current chapter of their lives because wherever you're feeling stuck, there's an opportunity to grow. In my book, that's what I do. I help people situate themselves in a story and apply the elements of a story that we learned about in, you know, elementary school or actually probably more like middle school. I don't know what they call it in Australia, as guardrails to sort of understand and frame your story and almost like normalize the experiences that people go through as a necessary part of human growth. So for example, like in every story, there's a protagonist who's trying to achieve something, overcome something, right? And at the beginning, things are fine. And then, you know, there's a catalyst, there's a crisis, right? And that's usually when the antagonist of the story presents itself. And all of a sudden, the protagonist of the story has to go on some kind of adventure, right? It's a little bit like, I don't know if you've heard of Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. There's this call to adventure, right? And that antagonist or whatever the crisis pushes the character of the story to face fears, to slay dragons, to experience the world in a different kind of way. And it pushes them to develop sort of those underdeveloped muscles so that they can become more fully developed characters and change in some way.
Yeah. And when we're talking about antagonists, right, an antagonist isn't always necessarily a person, right?
No, it's not. It can be a situation. It can be a hurricane. It can be a person. It can be a political climate, right?
Yeah.
It's anything that happens in the story that pushes the character to stretch and grow beyond their comfort zone. And I often say, like, it doesn't even have to be necessarily a negative event. In our own lives, like having a baby can stretch people to grow. Like a baby is not your adversary, but it is if you're situating it in a story, you know, a person's going along and they're, you know, living their best life. And all of a sudden they have another child. They have a child to take care of, right? And they've got to change their life up and put that child's needs first. And that stretches them to grow in a different way, right? to use different muscles than they ever used before. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like a negative event in the context of how I invite my readers to view their story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So in the context of that situation, someone's just had a child.
Right.
It's this big new thing and they're struggling through it. Who would be the antagonist in that scenario?
Well, they were just saying it would be the child. I
mean, it would be the baby.
It wouldn't actually be. I don't want to say that. It wouldn't be the baby. It's not the baby. It's the situation.
Yes.
And all that that demands of the protagonist.
That makes sense. Yes.
But not the actual, like, we don't want to say that the baby is the antagonist, you know, the villain of the story. Of course not. Right. Yes. But it's the situation that's pushing this character to stretch and grow in new ways.
Yes.
Right. And especially like if they don't have a lot of economic support or, you know, there's all kinds of things that push a person to have to grow in new ways.
So if someone, you know, heard about this concept and they were sort of like, don't make me turn this, you know, awful, you know, sad or horrible event into something empowering, you know, that's unrealistic, it ignores my feelings. How might you respond to that sort of response?
I would say I would absolutely agree with them, mm-hmm. right? This is not about glossing over the hard parts of a story. In fact, one of the things that I often talk about is, first of all, learning to really value the hard parts of the story, the conflict in the story, as an opportunity to grow. And I'll give you an example. I often use The Wizard of Oz. You can look at the story of The Wizard of Oz, right? Dorothy is this really neglected kid who feels really like she doesn't belong anywhere. And her dog runs away and they're not worthy, it comes back. And then she decides to run away from home. And then she ends up like getting swept up in a tornado and she kills this witch. And then the witch's sister starts chasing her and she makes friends. But all these like bad things happen to her that she has like monkeys and witch is trying to kill her, right? And then it turns out the wizard isn't even who she thought he was going to be. And she's disenchanted and disillusioned. And in the end, it turns out like she had the power to go home the whole time. You know, she didn't have to go through all this stuff. And then when she does return home, nobody believes that she went anywhere, right? That's like, that's sort of what I call a self-defeating story, right? But actually, the story of the Wizard of Oz can also be told as, you know, Dorothy, she doesn't really necessarily appreciate what she has, mm-hmm. right? She doesn't feel like she belongs where she is because everybody's so busy and they're sort of neglecting her. And she doesn't really know herself. So she goes on this journey, right? She gets swept up by a tornado, but she makes new friends. She helps them discover their strengths. She just gets in touch with her heart and really connects with her desire to return to the home that she was trying to run away from. Like all of a sudden she realizes, oh, wow, they are my home and I value my home. She discovers her own power. She returns home and they don't believe her, but doesn't matter because she's been transformed, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea there is that growth is an important part of the story that we don't always value. But it doesn't mean, to answer your question, it doesn't mean glossing over the hard parts, right? I'm a therapist and I would never, if somebody was like struggling with something, say, oh, but like, look, there's a silver lining. Or look, this is pushing you to grow. That would be completely insensitive. And as a therapist, that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to like be present for the pain, right? But if someone's feeling really stuck in a story and they're starting to feel like they have a victim story, I might help them to step out of that story and just be able to see it from another perspective and to really value all the obstacles they face, what they've come through, and to really be able to embrace what I often call as their soul narrative, right? Their hero's journey.
Yeah.
Because it's a way of finding meaning in our story, but there's a time for it. It's not necessarily if you're in the middle of something awful. You know, there are things that are really, really hard. And I will say, I think there are limits to my framework. I think sometimes there are just things that are very hard to come to terms with and tie up in this neat storyline with a bow.
Yeah.
You know, but in every situation, there is an opportunity to deepen. Like really, even if it's not what you want, there's always an opportunity to deepen and grow in compassion, right? So even if there's something terrible or tragic, if you can move through it, if you can actually move through your own experience and your feelings and really feel those feelings and really be compassionate towards the parts of you that have gone through this really difficult story, then you can expand your heart. You can become a more compassionate person. And if we can value that that's meaningful, right? That being in our bodies that way from a place of deeper compassion, you know, deeper connection to the sense of being part of humanity, then that's something important and potentially in some way, potentially redemptive, even though there are limits to that narrative.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it, because I do suppose you could approach this in a way that doesn't really recognize all of your parts and doesn't really have compassion and is just trying to sort of write this like empowering story that you don't really connect with. And you could approach it in a very like self-compassionate way that really recognizes your pain and difficulties.
Absolutely.
If you're enjoying this episode, you're definitely going to like Kim's online writing workshops that are available through her website, linked in the podcast show notes. Here are some of her thoughts on those.
Within the next month, I'm going to be leading an IFS writing lab called Exploring the Parts That Compare and Despair.
Ooh, that sounds good.
So if you have parts that tend to envy other people's houses or lives or relationships or bodies or whatever it is, personalities, we're going to be getting to know those parts to understand why they're comparing, because there are reasons why they're doing it. Mm. But we also want to understand what would happen if they couldn't compare and what's underneath. And by befriending those parts and really getting curious about them and going deep, the idea is to help us potentially unburden them from having to continue to compare. Sense?
Now let's get back to the podcast episode. And something that you talk about a lot is the idea of becoming a hero in your own story instead of a victim. I would love for you to share more about that and how someone might recognize they're in that victim story and lean into that hero energy.
Well, kind of like I was saying before about Dorothy, there's many different ways to tell your story, right? In fact, we're always sifting through multiple narratives every day, right? And choosing the details we include, what we omit, you know, how we spin it. People ask me, does your story matter? And I often say, well, of course it does, because how you tell your story affects how you feel about your story and can really influence how it unfolds, right? So if you're in this sort of like my first example with Dorothy, this negative victim story, things are happening to you and there's just no meaning. And that is just going to make you feel powerless. I mean, that's not to say there isn't a value of having a moment where you surrender into your powerlessness. Like there are things that happen that we have zero control over, right? Zero control over. And in those times when those things happen, it is appropriate at times just to feel the sadness, the powerlessness, to embrace that pain, which people often don't want to feel. Right? But it's getting stuck in a story about it that's problematic, right? If you can be compassionate towards the parts of you that have challenges, that's really different than telling yourself, well, this is because of me, or this always happens to me, or what's the point, right? And from an IFS perspective, diverging here, because I'm an internal family systems therapist, we understand the parts of you that tell your story as actually being parts that are trying to protect you in some way, which I don't want to complicate things yet because that will make it more confusing. But there is this way that, you know, we get depressed by telling us that, like, you know, nothing ever good happens to me. So why bother? Right. However, if we can reframe our story as a hero's journey, if we can really value those subtle and sometimes even small internal victories, like reacting. You know, let's say you have a problem with anger, and usually when something happens, you know, your child spills milk on the floor, you explode, right? But you're working on your anger, and next time you take a deep breath, right? And you're like, oh, okay. And you see the child's upset, like, hi, I'm so sorry. Oh, honey, it's okay. We'll just clean this up. Like, making that shift is an important part of your story, right? As a society, we tend to value achievements that are tangible, that we celebrate making a lot of money or getting that promotion or buying that big, beautiful dream house, whatever that is. We don't always celebrate those really important internal shifts that are often like much more harder earned, but much more valuable. Even just being able to shift our story, like from being a victim, just even being able to say like, wow, you know, that was so hard. And I really grew from that. You know, this situation I went through with my brother or sister after my, you know, parent died was so awful and challenging, but I was actually able to get in touch with different parts of myself that I hadn't realized were still hanging around from childhood and heal them. And by being, you know, being compassionate towards myself and curious about those parts. And now all of a sudden I'm feeling just like I have more compassion for everyone and I'm just feeling more open. If you can actually really value those internal victories that are often not celebrated, then you are the hero of your story. You don't need to like jump over, that they say Superman, like jump over a building, or, you know, there are heroes in our society for sure, like Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela. And, you know, there are heroes in our society, but there are also quieter heroes who every day overcome challenges and face them often without anyone noticing. And if we can look at our lives as a story, and, you know, I often talk about the antagonist is like your personal trainer, whatever challenges, like your personal trainer, and it's pushing you to develop those underutilized internal emotional muscles, right? Mm. That maybe you don't even want, like sometimes we don't want to go to the gym, right? It's like, we don't want to do the workout. But once we do it and we work through that, we're stronger, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that whole thing, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But if you can really value those growth experiences, and not just mentally, like in terms of like just thinking about that way, but how you experience yourself, how you experience other people, how connected you feel to this experience we're all having, which is being a human being, you know, then in my book, you're a hero of your own story. That, yeah. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it makes total sense. I love mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
And what I'd really like to know as well is, I mean, you've got this beautiful framework that you've laid out in your book of how to implement this and the real nitty gritty of it. And I would really like to know, how do you implement this in your own life? Like, do you have at the start of the year, you're like, okay, I'm going to write my chapter story and here's my antagonist? Or is it sort of in the moment as you're experiencing challenges in your head, you sort of run through this framework or you journal on it? I would just really like to know how you implement it in your own life.
Okay. First of all, since writing my book, I've subsequently been trained in internal family systems therapy, which is also known as prep work. So that process is usually my go-to. It's a little more somatic, getting in touch with the part in the body, feeling it out, you know, how do I feel towards the part? That's usually my go-to for working through like when I'm feeling stuck. Mm-hmm. I'm just being honest.
No, that's good.
There is a framework in which I view my life, mm-hmm. in which that I do really believe that personal growth is what I'm here to do on this earth. And therefore, I really do look at my life as an unfolding story and the challenges that I face. And I just had breast cancer last year.
Oh my gosh.
You know, both my parents have had, you know, died of cancer years ago. So the challenges that I faced have really helped me to stretch and grow and become the kind of character I've been talking about, a more connected and compassionate human being. Often when I'm doing writing workshops,
yeah,
I will sit down and do it. And I'll be like, oh, I should do this more often.
Yeah, that's just good. This is
good. In fact, stuff. You're inspiring me like to do, there's a chapter summary that I do that I often, I'm like, oh, I should do this all the time. And now I'm thinking, because I'm struggling with a decision I have to make, I should do that this week. So thank you for inspiring that. I'm also very into these. I don't know if you're familiar with Jungian archetypes.
Oof, not really.
Okay. There's this idea that there are these storylines, right? Like the seeker storyline and the orphan storyline and, you know, the warrior storyline. Like there are these storylines that play out in our lives whose goal is to initiate us into higher levels of consciousness.
Ooh, okay. Right?
Like I'm often sometimes aware of like, oh, I'm really in seeker mode right now.
Okay.
You know, or I'm in this creator storyline right now.
Right.
So I am really consciously aware of being in a story, even if I'm not actually doing my own writing exercise, which I should be, because they do work. Every time I do a writing workshop, people are like, these are so helpful. And it's only my own parts that kind of get in the way. And
that makes sense.
But they really can be really helpful in terms of helping you step out of your story and viewing it from a wholly, totally different perspective. I used to do these workshops all the time and people were like, I just feel like so much lighter. I feel like so much like more compassionate towards my journey. It's that third person narrative that really helps them step out of your story. And then, for example, when I talk about conflict, right? Mm-hmm. And this is an important part, like every story has a conflict. That's when the antagonist shows up. And it's the conflict between the protagonist and the antagonist that creates the friction, which heats up the story. So it's absolutely necessary. So this idea that even though we tend to avoid conflicts or not like conflicts, they're just such an important part of the human story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I kind of often try to reframe them like, okay, yeah, I'm the first to say, like, I don't want to take a harder path. It's funny because I often do, for some reason, choose a harder path. But my first inclination is often to avoid it.
Yeah, I think that's human nature. Yeah.
Right? But because ultimately, it's what challenges you that helps you grow. Just like any conflict in a story, it's that conflict. it helps you grow. And then there's a climax often. Like in every story, it starts out here and then there's a conflict and the story kind of comes to, you know, this peak experience where you have to make a decision. You have to, you know, share your feelings for your best friend or break up with your boyfriend or submit your screenplay to a contest, whatever that is, right? Whatever that moment is in the classic hero's journey, it's when the hero confronts the dragon and slays the dragon and is transformed. And then from there, things kind of, you know, there's a resolution. And this is like cyclical, though. It's not just like in life, there isn't just one arc. There's many in many different chapters.
And I mean, even though you may not sit down and formally use your own framework, it sounds like you have lots of threads of it within your life. And you're probably referencing the ideas of your framework pretty regularly in your mind, whether you know it or not.
No, I think that's true.
Yeah. And you're talking a lot about internal family systems, which you're obviously, that's your area of expertise and maybe your area of focus more so right now. How do you weave that in with the shaping your story process? How does that all work together?
Sure. So for the past year and a half, I've been offering these IFS writing labs. And what that does, I'll pick like a topic, whether it's befriending your anxiety or penetrating your inner perfectionist, right? I have like topics. And within that, I will use writing in the third person and parts dialogues, like dialoguing with your parts to help people develop better relationship with different parts of themselves. And it kind of integrates really well with Step Out of Your Story, because one of the premises of Step Out of Your Story is that when you're faced with challenges, those challenges in your story activate different parts of yourself. Sometimes wounded parts, right? So by befriending those parts, by getting curious about parts, by really deeply listening to those parts and understanding what's going on, right? That's where you can actually grow. In my book, I didn't know about IFS when I wrote the book, but I have these like dialoguing with courage, right? Because like, let's say the hero of your story needs to like find courage. Well, we all have courage within us. That's one of the premises of IFS.
Yeah.
You know, IFS is, for people that don't know, is this idea that we come into the world with an abundance of what's called self-energy. And that energy is calm, compassionate, connected, clear, courageous, creative, connected, and compassionate. There's 8 C words.
Sounds fabulous. Right. Where did all the other parts come from? Where did all the bad parts come from? Did they come in later? No bad parts, my bad. I haven't seen a book with that title.
So that's like the premise of Richard Schwartz's book, No Bad Parts, is there are no bad parts. The idea is we come in with this energy for these little babies making constant bids for attention and connection. And when those bids are met with rejection, shame, neglect, abuse, right? As children, we blame ourselves, like I'm unlovable, I'm invisible, I don't matter, I'm weak, I'm bad. And first of all, that's how our brains are wired. And we can't think like the people that are taking care of us are the ones who are problematic, because we're completely vulnerable and entrusted into their hands, right? So we blame ourselves. And basically, those ideas about ourselves, those are burdens. And they live inside of us, in our bodies, as inner wounded children. But because we can't live in that state all the time, they're actually called exiles, right? So we exile them from consciousness, and we develop these parts that help us survive and sometimes even thrive. For example, if your parents were very critical and only rewarded you when you got A's, right? Maybe some part of you would feel like, oh, I'm unlovable. Would realize that you got positive attention when you got A pluses. And so a part of you would just work really hard to be a good student, right? So what happens is the parts help you survive, but they can get stuck in an extreme role. So over time, that part that feels like it has to be perfect in order to be loved can become someone who, as an adult, is driving themselves to burnout by working so hard and neglecting other parts of their lives that are important and not even in touch with the fact that deep down they don't feel loved.
Yeah.
And the idea is like they're sort of frozen in time. So oftentimes in life, when something triggers us, inner children get stirred and our protective parts come in and they're like, ah, we got to protect you. Sometimes even anger is a part that defends against feeling annihilated, You know, if I can destroy you, then I don't have to integrate what you're saying about me and feel like I'm nothing, right? Or you can have power over me and make me feel like a doormat, right? So these parts are all designed to help us in some way or another.
Right.
So going back to step out of your story a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're in a chapter of your life where you're facing this big conflict, right? You have this big antagonist that's facing you, and it's triggering that little wound inside you that doesn't feel enough. Right. So you might want to do some dialogues with that part, or the part of you that feels enough and the part of you that's always like trying to do smoke and mirrors so nobody can feel that. So you can dialogue with those parts. And there are ways to actually unburden and heal those parts by developing a relationship to it. I could go on and on about IFS.
Yeah. And you could almost treat those parts as like characters in your story in a way, right?
Yeah. Those parts could be characters. Absolutely.
Yeah. I had this question, you know, I've tried to reframe certain stories in my life in the past, and I've been like, okay, like what's a more healthy and empowering way to view this story? And I'll pick this new perspective, but then a part of me will be like, oh my God, please, you know, stop trying to feed me that story. Like we're not dumb over here. And I wonder if parts work would help you to choose a perspective that actually like felt right for you. Is that something you've ever experienced with people in your workshops or people that you've worked with? I don't know, you feel like you're sort of telling yourself a lie and you're like, I'm not buying into that.
I'm not sure I totally understand the question.
Sure.
Can you give me like an example?
I'm trying to think of an example that's not too personal, that doesn't feel too vulnerable. Oh, she's a really impersonal example. I'll be like, you know what? I'm struggling to post on Instagram. And then it's like, let's reframe that and let's see Instagram as the challenge or whatever. And now I'm trying to view it as like a game. How would you work with someone that was like, look, I feel like I'm telling myself a lie when I create this new story for myself, I suppose.
Right. Okay. Yeah. First of all, we're not talking about the power of positive thinking.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
If they don't like posting stuff on Instagram and it's really bothering them. Sometimes some people do benefit from like looking at it as a game, and my parts don't work that way.
Sure.
Right. From an IFS perspective, that sounds like it's a manager part. We all have these manager parts, right? When our inner exile gets stirred, the manager parts either tries to control things or firefighters try to put out the fires and check us out. It sounds like a manager part that's trying to use story as a way to not feel something else.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that's what it's happening. It's like, I'm trying to manage it. So I would get curious about what is that part concerned would happen? You know, it's obviously wants to tell you a story about Instagram. What is it concerned would happen if it couldn't tell you that story? And what would be so terrible about that? And we're not forcing anyone to put on a different set of lenses in an inorganic way.
Yeah.
What Step Out of Your Story does is to help them actually get a little bit of distance from their story. You know, we tend to be more compassionate towards others than we are towards ourselves. So they can actually find a little bit more inner compassion. Like, this is a hard thing, right? Can we have compassion for the part of you that has to do something for your profession that you don't really enjoy doing? Right? And if you writing your story, Michelle has to, I don't know if this is what you have to do, but like has to post things on Instagram, even though she really hates it. She'd rather not be on social media. But you know, some part of her that just loves what she does so much. And she realizes that this is the price that she has to pay in order to do things that she really loves doing. If you were writing in a third person perspective, you might be able to frame it that way and actually believe it.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Because it gets in touch with what the nexus of the value is.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. So that's sort of like one example of a challenge that someone might have, like feeling like they're telling themselves like an inauthentic story or reframe of something that they don't really resonate with. Are there any other challenges that you see come up for people a lot when they do this kind of work?
Sure. Sometimes people get stuck on the writing. People have like those very perfectionistic writing parts. We have like these eloquent storylines with perfect, you know, grammar. And I often say to them, first of all, this is about using writing as a tool of self-discovery. It's not about writing a Pulitzer. From an IFS perspective now, I ask them to just like acknowledge that part. What are you concerned would happen? Maybe even explore it. What is that part concerned would happen if it couldn't write well? You know, write a perfectly beautiful piece of prose, you know. Sometimes it's just like acknowledging it, asking it to step back.
But thank you so much for your time. And there will be a link in the show notes as well as the description so that everyone can access your website and sign up to that should they want to. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. For every episode, I like to share at least two little mini action steps that you can take to take what you've just learned and put it into practice in your life, because otherwise, what is the point? And mini move number one is, think of a story that you keep on telling to yourself, to friends or family, where you are consistently the victim. This is a poor me story. What poor me story exists right now in your world? The story could be so small, but it could also be huge and deeply affecting your life. Mini move number two. Imagine, you know, as you are listening to this, imagine the exact same situation comes up in a book or a movie that you're watching. See yourself from that third person perspective and ask, well, why would the author or the creator of this story put the main character in this situation? What are they trying to teach that character? How are they wanting the character to grow out of this situation? And what would I hope as the viewer that the main character would do in response to these circumstances? What actions or outcomes would I be rooting for as the reader? Now let's move into the recommendations of the week. If you really enjoyed the ideas in this podcast episode, here are some recommendations that will help you to dive a little deeper. Firstly, you know, I have to recommend Kim's book, Step Out of Your Story, because if you're listening to this episode and you're like, damn, these are some great ideas, but how do I actually put it into practice? That book is so detailed and it gives you so many ideas of how you can really put this into practice. Sometimes you read like self-growthy books and you're like, wow, that's all so inspiring and great, but like, what do I do with it? This is not one of those kind of books. The second recommendation of the week is the forgiveness episode of this podcast with Fred Luskin. That was episode number four, How to Become Happier and Healthier Through Forgiveness with Fred Luskin. He actually talks about a really similar idea when it comes to resentment and blame and how when you're in those states, usually you are painting yourself as the victim of your story. And that episode can definitely help you to shift any stories that you have that revolve around blame or a lack of forgiveness or even just any interpersonal struggles. You'll benefit from that podcast episode. Thanks for listening, and I will see you in the next one.